Welcome to Money Sense. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations at Ellen Becker Investment Group. Today on Money Sense, we're talking about what it really means to show up as a leader when it matters most. I'm joined by Jen Marr, founder and CEO of Showing Up and author of Lifting Up. In this conversation, we'll explore practical ideas leaders can apply to support their teams and themselves. Welcome to the show today, Jen.
Thank you, Jill. Great to be here.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So this idea of showing up is so important in so many different aspects, right? As founder and CEO of Showing Up, whose mission is to bridge the gap between those who care and those who feel unseen, and you're also the author of Lifting Up, this new book on transformative power of supportive leadership. Tell us about your personal and your professional journey of over 30 years that led to your work and your writing.
I spent a lot of time in international business development for a healthcare company and took a career break when my three young daughters were born. Mm-hmm. My husband had a job that required travel, so I decided to stay home with the girls. At the time, I ended up being only 6 miles away from the Sandy Hook Elementary shooting when that happened. Now, being a business development executive internationally, my brain is always one that wanted to make something better. And to grow something. So being involved in a crisis response at Sandy Hook, my mind was just constantly watching what was happening. I was in the school every week and watching the behaviors of what was there to support that school and what was working and what wasn't. Mm. Just 4 months after that, believe it or not, I was 700 yards from the finish line of the Boston Marathon when the bombs exploded.
Oh my goodness.
Now I had dedicated mile 26 to all my new friends at Sandy Hook, but I didn't even get there. I was 0.2 miles away from that. And so through that combined experience, one of one needing support and the other one giving it, it took a few years to sort things out. But what became very clear was that when humans are faced with a lot of stress and hardship or crisis or distress, we get awkward and our behaviors get off track. We think we're doing something. Sometimes we're not sure what to do and we don't do anything. And so in the aftermath of these tragedies, I was watching how very well-intentioned people, like there wasn't anybody that didn't have compassion or empathy for what was happening at Sandy Hook, but how people acted on that was not helpful in most cases. One example, 80,000 teddy bears were sent to town of 20,000 people. Warehouses and warehouses full of bikes and books and toys and teddy bears. And it burdened a community that was already struggling.
Okay.
So to me, it was an immediate indicator that sometimes even our emotions is not a good indicator of how to support people around you that are hurting. So it really took me in a deep dive of human behaviors, human suffering, human responses to those around us that are going through difficult times. And over the last decade, it went from just studying those behaviors to applying them to all different contexts, whether that's on a college campus or nonprofits that are working with a lot of suicide prevention, as an example. A lot of my work was funded by the New York Office of Mental Health and Suicide Prevention because it's upstream. A lot of times things happen and we respond to them happening, but this kind of work goes ahead of that. Okay. And so the same concept holds true in business or in any kind of an organization where people gather, that for too long, we've been waiting for the crisis or the disruption or the uncertainty or the layoff to happen. And we haven't developed the human behaviors and the skills to get ahead of some of those things, to number one, be ready to support them, or number two, in many cases, to prevent some of them from happening.
Mm. And you know, it's unfortunate because our kids, actually, I don't think I even, we're not taught those skills. You know,
no.
It's something that we really have to own ourselves and go seek out. You know, how do we be the boots on the ground? Mm-hmm. How do we be the answer to what somebody needs? Like you said, compassion, there's no shortage of that. It's just what does a person or a group of people or a community need in mm-hmm. order to thrive on that flip side of that tragedy, right? Mm-hmm. Like you talked about being involved with a number of very sad situations with Sandy Hook and then, of course, the Boston Marathon. How has your approach helped people lead and support others in a world marked by disruption, uncertainty, and emotional depletion?
Yeah. Well, the question is answered best by helping people understand what's happening in our world and how we're responding to that. Because everything is different than it was even 10 years ago when you think about it. Mm-hmm. And our bodies are under sustained stress. We're not at a point of stability anymore. We're not at this point where all old forms of business, all old forms of life really kind of had you coming back to a point of stable. And that's not happening now. And so to help people get through it, first, we want to help connect the dots of what's happening. And when there is sustained pressures, our bodies are not equipped just to stay stable. Mm-hmm. We kind of stay in this constant stress alert. And in order to overcome that, we have to be able to lean on each other. It's just how our bodies are wired. Mm-hmm. You just take any situation that you're going through. If you're handling it by yourself, it makes it a lot worse. You know, sometimes we feel like, I got to get this off my chest. I can't deal with this myself. That's our body's wiring that says, you need help with this. Go find someone. And yet we're in a world right now that is so busy and distracted that spending time with people feels like a luxury. So it's really important, number one, to help people understand this is what's happening. And actually, our bodies are impacted. And we need to understand that. And secondly, really helping them understand what stops us. We dive into this awkward zone training because there are real accessible and repeatable habits, mindsets, and behaviors that we get into or we fall into that end up being the sending the teddy bear to Sandy Hook. Mm. That even though we think we're doing the right action, we're actually not.
We need to take a quick break. So we're going to dive into this a little bit more and we're going to talk more about some core ideas and more of the things that you're talking about specifically within this book. So let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Want to keep building wealth that aligns with your values? New episodes of Money Sense drop weekly. Subscribe now and continue learning how your money, your choices, and your life can work together.
Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm your host, Jill Economo, and I'm visiting today with Jen Marr, founder and CEO of Showing Up. Jen, we want to get into the core ideas from Lifting Up, and I'm sure you know the phrase, leaders are readers, but leaders need more than words. They need aligned action. So tell us more about that.
Absolutely. And as we were talking about right before we went to break, there's just a bunch of awareness that has to happen in order for there to be a desire to know the actions to take. Outside of what we were talking about with just a world in the book, we refer to it as VUCA world, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous, which is really explains everything that's going on. And you layer on top of that so many generational challenges. Everybody's dealing with generational differences. And to understand how we break it down in the book is the native analogs, those that grew up without a screen in their hand, and the native digitals, those that grew up with a screen in their hand. Because the behaviors and the needs and the expectations of a work environment are completely different for both. And quite honestly, they each have different strengths, which really can be capitalized. So once we understand that, along with the awkward zone, which we really dive into to help people understand what areas of the awkward zone they're falling into, then we dive into what is it going to take to build up that culture? Because a lot of times, if we're not understanding the human condition under stress, in organizations, we might jump straight to, we have to be resilient, you know, like let's practice positive psychology and let's be resilient. And I've had the pleasure of working with Dr. Matthew Lee from the Harvard Flourishing Program, and who has really helped open my eyes to culture really starts with people feeling like they matter, that they're respected, that they're heard, they're understood, and they're valued, which then if you have that, you can grow to community and you can grow your relationships. And only when those are in place will you get resilience. And so with all of that in mind, we then break it down to the four main problems that are happening because of all these things. The first is nobody has time. Nobody has time for anything. So what happens in an organization is, well, my leader's not around. They're not available. And when leaders aren't available, that breaks communication down because we tend to think, well, we'll just send a Slack or we'll send an email. But emails and Slack are informing. You know, communicating is when I can look you in the eye and I know you understand what I'm talking about.
Right.
And when we replace informing from communicating, it breaks down. So it's natural that if leaders aren't available, then communication is going to break down because we don't read emails the same as a conversation. When that breaks
no matter
down,
how many exclamation points we put in there, right?
Bolded letters. And when those two break down, then you lose psychological safety. People aren't going to speak up. And when that happens, you get burnout and overwhelm. And so it's just this cyclical thing that's happening. And the way around that then is to recognize that we need humans in the process because of what we talked about with the human condition. And in order for humans to be in the process, they have to be able to have small, quick micro moment skills to deal with that. We talk about the five key traits of a supportive leader, or a lifting up five, we call it, which is number one, available. You have to be available, even for small snippets of time. You have to be attentive. You have to see what's going on. But more than that, number three, you have to be attuned. You have to be able to read between the lines. And after that, you need to be affirming. Everybody needs to know why they're in their job, what they're doing well. You know, if it weren't for you, Jill, what? Everyone should know that.
Right.
And the last is invested. So that's really what we break down to. If we can get leaders to understand those five key traits and use them against the core four, that's where we make progress. So all the skills in the playbook in this book, the whole last section of Lifting Up is a playbook. And it's all packed full of micro moment skills and frameworks, how to attack that. And we can talk about some of those next.
Well, and you make reference to the awkward zone. And so I just want to make sure that our listeners are familiar with what that is.
The awkward zone is that space that we think we're a good person and we think our actions are reflective of that, but people walk away saying, they have no clue.
Okay.
And there are four areas in the awkward zone that we fall into. Two of them, they just stay in our heads. We either doubt, like, oh, I don't know if it's the right time. I don't want to make them more sad. So driven out of fear. Or we deflect. I wasn't trained to do that. That's not my role. Like someone else can do that. There's a committee for that. That's what HR is for. So those both stay in our heads to the point where we never even have a conversation with that person, not even interactions on that issue. The two front facing, so responding areas we fall into patterns. One is the boss that's the fixer, like just, okay, do this, try that, go there, do this, without really understanding. And validating and acknowledging what that person's going through. And the other one is if I'm talking to you and I know something major is going on in your life and I don't even bring it up, that's the avoider. So those are four accessible areas that we can work through with people to help them create that common language and get people to say, I'm being a fixer here. Let me just step back and know the skills to attach to that.
Well, it reminds me of the quote that people don't care what you know until they know that you care, right? I mean, that plays into that so much. Tell us how disruption and human stress impact teams.
You know, humans under stress, pressure, anxiety tend to isolate. It's how our body's wiring goes. It's like almost this protective mechanism. When in fact, our wiring, like what we were just talking about before, like I got to get this off my chest, is signaling to us that you need someone to help you through that. So as we're going through difficult times, people more than anything need support, but they're isolating more. And if I'm sure you've seen the statistics, they're off the chart with loneliness, isolation.
Yes. Yeah.
And so as people are getting stressed out, they're wanting to spend more time alone, which is just making the problem worse, yeah. Which is why lifting up is all about how a leader plays a role. And it kind of goes down the chain. Like, people have to look out for each other. And we have to be able to talk people through this and work together, and it will save time. Ultimately, we think it's going to, oh, there's so much time. I don't have time for that. You don't have time not to do it, because right, avoiding right. the hard conversations and just ignoring those areas of the awkward zone, just letting those play out is really what's causing a lot of this to begin with.
Mm. It's that letting people know you care piece mm-hmm. before you go into
you're not in
trying
this
to
alone.
Fix it. And yeah.
I got your back.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get through this together. Mm-hmm. I'm here to guide you through it.
Yeah.
That's what a good leader does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, give us a simple framework that can make supportive leadership doable.
Mm. Well, I would start with one of the key frameworks that we really love to talk about is just the fast and frequent one-on-one. You know, in the old world, we used to have one-on-ones that were agenda-driven. It would be 30 minutes and you sit down and no one has time for that, obviously. But that's not even effective anymore. Mm. When someone is in complete overwhelm, they don't even have the ability themselves to be able to prioritize. And if they have 10 tasks on their plate, they get overwhelmed just by trying to figure out what they will tackle that day. So we kind of pair two skills, which would be the fast and frequent one-on-one with what we call capacity and demand, and training leaders and teams to know how to be quickly aware of, okay, Jill, that's what's all on your plate. Today, just focus on that. I'm giving you permission to put all those other 9 items aside, and I just need you to do this today. Mm. Because that gives clarity to the person, removes the overwhelm, and also gives the leader a better sense of what's actually getting done on my team.
Mm-hmm. You talk about all these things and the human human element of it all. And I just think about conversations recently with AI. And I'm thinking, how on earth are we going to, is there even conversation about how AI can take over in certain capacities? And, you know, you're talking about this compassion, empathy, you know, showing up for somebody that cannot be done through AI. And so, I mean, certainly AI has its place. Don't get me wrong. I'm just thinking about these things you're talking about and how AI has been a topic of so much conversation lately. I don't see how that comes together when we are needing to care for each other and care for those that care for others.
Well, the funny thing is about AI and this, sometimes AI is more supportive than the human, because when the human's not available, the person can go into AI and just say, this is terrible, blah, blah, blah. And AI will say, oh, I know it's terrible. Like, here, why don't you try this? Right. And what that's doing is it's taking us apart from each other.
Yeah.
And so if we don't build back the skills to be that person, we're just going to stay more and more isolated. And yeah. AI is actually really good on some things. But when it's taking what a good leader should do to develop team cohesion mm-hmm. and develop effective, loyal teams that are going to be far more productive, you're never going to get a collaborative, innovative team if everyone is just on their own on AI.
Right, right.
And so we need those leaders to pull that all together.
Well, you talked about the importance of looking at somebody and building that connection. And certainly looking into the eyes of a robot is nothing like looking into the eyes of an actual person to make that right. connection, right? Well, we're going to take another quick break. But when we return, we're going to learn more about where the rubber hits the road. So stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Want to keep building wealth that aligns with your values? New episodes of Money Sense drop weekly. Subscribe now and continue learning how your money, your choices, and your life can work together.
Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations at Ellen Becker Investment Group. And I am talking in our last segment, continuing our conversation with Jen Marr, founder and CEO of Showing Up. And we're talking about her book, Lifting Up, and some of the great nuggets that are in there. In this last segment, we want to talk about where the rubber hits the road in terms of relational needs of empathy and support. So we know it's one thing to say, you know, you need to be more compassionate or you need to have empathy. But what does that really look like? And what are the tools to really show up in life and work?
It's such a great question. Because for the last decade or so, we really have taken a deep dive into EQ, right? Emotional intelligence. And so we're very aware of emotions. And empathy and compassion obviously are great emotions for caring for people, but they are emotions, they're nouns. And as we saw in the aftermath of Sandy Hook, nouns don't mean you're going to put the right actions to them. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about empathy as a skill, it's not a skill, it's a feeling. And if we really want to break through some of these things, I almost want to take emotions out of the equation. Because when you're a leader in disruptive times, it's not helpful to say, be empathetic, be compassionate, be vulnerable. Like, you don't have even time to think about that. You
don't have time to.
What does that mean? Yeah. Like, and so that really is where my research has gone, because we can have good emotions, but the awkward zone shows us we have opposing emotions. We'll have denial or fear or doubt. So let's take emotions out of it and let's just have real solid skills. It should be as pragmatic as any other skill in the handbook. And so one of the areas that we really focus on are what leads to so much of this is the right conversations aren't happening in the first place. Every single awkward zone scenario is a reflection of no conversation happening or conversations done poorly. And again, like stepping back, leaders weren't trained for this. It's a different, we used to have a workplace where it says, leave it at the door, you know,
right.
You know, work is work, home is home. And, mm-hmm. but work and work isn't home and home. It doesn't work anymore. You know,
the lines are blurred.
There is no door anymore. And so, how does that look? And so all of a sudden leaders are like, well, wait a second, I don't know how to have these conversations. That's HR's job. But it's so prevalent that we have to put it in the hands of the leader. One of the biggest areas we train and work on with this book is what we call the supportive conversation method. And the supportive conversation method is made up of a bunch of different frameworks that really walk leaders through all the different kind of conversations they need to have. Like one we start with is the unexpected support needing conversation. So we've all been in that situation where all of a sudden, like, you run into someone and they have tears in their eyes, or you're in a meeting and someone blurts out something. And at the moment, you can't deal with it, but you can't ignore it either. Mm-hmm. So we have a simple framework how to acknowledge, redirect, and follow up under that scenario. But everything kind of leads to what we would call the support giving conversation, which is a very simple framework of this is what you need to do. Your first conversation should not be offering anything. You are literally walking through these steps to really understand what's going on. And so make sure you do this, ask this, do this, do this. Then you take a break. A support giving conversation should never end with the exact solution. What it should be is, I've heard you. Mm. Let me get back to you with what I think I can do. Because that leaves the employee feeling seen. Mm-hmm. You haven't just thrown up on all over what they've said with your own thoughts. And it gives you time to really sit back and reflect on what you can do and look at all different avenues. What do I do as a leader? Who can I connect them to? Or what resources do we have as a company? And then the follow-up conversations. And then the third area that we look at under the conversation method is support seeking. Now, if we have leaders that are very well versed at support giving, then we train up the next level that knows how to go to you for support, right? And a big part of that, Jill, is like understanding, what have I tried to solve for it myself, right? I think some people get tripped up. They're afraid to ask for support. They're afraid to speak up because they're not quite sure, what do I say? How do I do it? How do I frame that? And so we built out a framework for that so that they have confidence. And then especially if the leaders know how to respond, that's how you're really going to start having these conversations. These should not be long emotional conversations. The best supportive leaders that I love are sports coaches, mm-hmm. because they, you know, they have an injured player, that player's on injured reserve. What are you going to do for your team? They're accountable for the game plan. They're the ones driving it, But they have to have that team cohesion. They have to care for those employees. They have to guide people through hardships, through losses, through everything. And a good supportive leader is always shown in a good football coach.
Interesting. So good. So good. Well, share with us first steps to showing up with steadiness and intention. So you talk a little bit about it and what you were just talking about before, but can you expand on that specifically with steadiness and intention?
Yeah, steadiness and intention really means to really start leaning into those five traits of a lifting up leader, to really think about how am I spending my time? How am I being attentive? How am I making sure I'm affirming this person? How am I growing culture? And a lot of that will be to set into place these skills that we've have. I've showed you a couple. I've showed you capacity and demand and the fast and frequent one-on-one. But this book is filled with them. Mm. It's filled with how do you start a meeting? How do you have conversation starters? How do you, if there's an emergency situation, what do you do? What are just the basic human relational 101 elements I need to be aware of? And so it's a combination of really making sure we're aware of what people need and then also putting into place, look, we can't change everybody overnight. It would be just like, I want to learn how to cook. Well, what do you do? Okay, well, here's a cookbook. start with boiling eggs. Get some confidence in that and then just keep growing. So it really is the steadiness is a leader saying, I'm going to tackle this and I am going to make sure I am in good relationship with the people that report to me so that we are steady and solid as a group and that they will remain loyal and you will get your best production and friendships and relationships out of that. Mm.
I know a number of leaders of organizations that would say that they think that they're pretty good at the things that you're talking about. And I would say, you know, obviously we should never stop learning. Mm-hmm. We should continue on our growth path. And so it's so good to just fill your mind with all these great ideas that people will find in this book. Even if you say, I think I'm pretty good at that, you might find that you're not as good as you thought you were. So tell us how people can get their hands on this book and what's the best way to get to you. If someone listening wants to, number one, buy the book, get more information about the book, and number two, get to you and some of the other things that you're offering in terms of leadership.
Thank you. Well, I would love to meet you. You can find me on LinkedIn under Jen Marr. You can find the book on Amazon. It's in every form, audiobook, hardcover, softcover, ebook. We have a website, showing-up.com. Again, showing up, but there's a dash in there, .com. I also have a personal website, Jen Marr, JenMarr.com. Or email me at jen@showing-up.com. I would love to talk to you.
Wonderful. Well, we never have enough time to talk about all the things that we would love to talk about. You and I could do a deep dive into so many off conversations that we have talked about or started between the break. So I really encourage you to reach out to Jen, tap her for her areas of expertise in terms of leadership. Just ask the questions or just go out and buy the book. So thank you, Jen Marr. Thanks, Jill. CEO of Showing Up and author of Lifting Up. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Jill.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining us on Money Sense. We hope today's conversation made a meaningful difference in your personal and financial well-being. At Ellen Becker Investment Group, before we plan, before we advise, and before we invest, we always listen.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Money Sense, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. If you found today's conversation helpful, we encourage you to share it with a friend or family member, and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. At Ellen Becker Investment Group, we believe that education is the foundation of confident financial decisions. That's why we're proud to bring you insights from experienced professionals to help you build true wealth beyond just money. Please note, this podcast is intended for general informational purposes only and does not constitute personalized financial advice. Before making any financial decisions, we recommend consulting with a qualified advisor who understands your unique situation. For more resources, visit ellenbecker.com. We'll be back soon with more insights to help you live with clarity and confidence.